Welcome everyone to the Apocalary Podcast. I'm Steve. He's Larry. Doesn't he look good today?
And I'm Larry.
That's true. You can say I'm Larry. I'm Larry. No, I'm Larry. No, it even says your name in the little corner there. You can see it says Larry and it says Steve.
Oh.
We do that just in case people get us confused. No, that's not the reason we did that. We do that because the software we use makes us do that. Anyway, Larry, good to see you, my friend.
Good to be here, Steve.
Yeah, we say that every week. We actually mean it most weeks, too. It's good to be here. We're happy to see you along on this ride with us, folks. Just a quick announcement for those of you who haven't noticed. We're actually on Apple iTunes and in the Apple Podcast app. And we're also on Google Play. So if you're looking for a little bit of, on the go, mobile Apocalary, you can take mobile Apocalary with you on your phone and mobile device. Heck, even your tablet. I don't care. Take it anywhere you want. But we're here for you. Larry, we're going to jump into Revelation 15. Anything you want to say before we start off, or should we just jump right in? Up to you.
This time, let's just jump in.
Right on. Folks, again, as always, we're reading out of the ESV, and we're going to start. You should be able to see it if you're watching the video version. You'll see it on the left-hand side of that screen. And I'm going to read verse 1 just to kind of give us a sense here. And then I saw another sign in heaven, great and amazing, seven angels with seven plagues, which are the last, for with them the wrath of God is finished. Now, Larry, kind of a weird sort of statement here, because isn't there more wrathy type things about to happen to these people who don't believe? Is wrathy a word? I'm sorry, maybe it's not a word, who knows?
No, wrathy, isn't he a children's singer?
Is that right? Oh, yes, Rafi, yes.
Yes, he, down he, in the something or other, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. He keeps saying that he's going to finish everything up with the wrath that's coming, right? Or with the anger that's coming. We've had the seven trumpets. Before that, we had the seven seals. So seven seals, seven trumpets, seven thunders. We didn't know what they were. Yep. And now we've got the seven bowls coming, the seven bowls of God's anger. Hmm. And yeah, he does. He says, with this it's finished, but he won't actually quite finish. He will take us to the end of time again. Hmm. But then he'll still have a little bit to say about, the marriage supper of the Lamb. Hmm. And the final destruction of the great war in Babylon and things like that. Yep. So there's still stuff coming. But he does say, one of the authors says, this is a glimpse of the end, finally. This is the, this guy said, I was teaching a class. It was horrible. I was looking for the end of the class to finally come. And we've all, any of us who have taught have experienced that.
Guilty.
And he said, he saw the end of the class coming. And this is that. This is the final glimpse of the end. So he says, I saw in the sky, I saw in the heavens, another great and amazing sign, the seven angels with the seven plagues, which are the last. And this is the final expression of God's wrath. And we don't often talk about Greek, but orge is anger, and thumos is wrath. And they've used both in this one, but this one is wrath, this one's thumos. So this is God's wrath being poured out, right? And it was before too, right? Before it was God's wrath being poured out too, and now again. And for some reason, it's going to be an intensified pouring out of his wrath. Right? In the trumpets, it was a third every time. In the bowls, it's going to be a full outpouring of his wrath.
Okay.
And so if you're doing this, if you're sitting in the Lord's Supper and someone's reading this to you, you're feeling the tensity of the whole thing build.
Okay.
So that's what's happening here. And this is very much God's wrath being outpoured.
Okay.
And chapter 16 is going to do that for us.
Okay. Okay. And again, like you reminded us previously, it's not like he even named the angels. It's kind of like, hey, you seven over here. Come, I got something for you to do.
Yeah.
Seven bowls. Go do it.
There's been angels all the way through this, right? There were seven with the trumpets. There were three just a minute ago in chapter 14. There were those three angels.
Right.
Now there's seven again.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. And we'll read 2 to the end of 4, right? From there. Okay. And then I saw what appeared to be a sea of glass mingled with fire, and those who had conquered the beast in its image and the number on its name, or sorry, and the number of its name, standing beside the sea of glass with harps of gods in their hands. With harps of God in their hands, sorry. And they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, great and amazing are your deeds, O Lord God the Almighty. Just and true are your ways, O King of the nations. Who will not fear, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you alone are holy. All the nations will come and worship you, for your righteous acts have been revealed. Now, Larry, you and I were talking about this just before we even started recording, but where do we find this certain song of Moses?
yeah. This song of Moses we don't find.
Huh.
And the guys who talk about this, the people who talk about this have trouble with this. Yeah. Like everything in Revelation, there's nothing you don't have trouble with.
Yeah.
But this is not just the song of Moses. It's the song of Moses and the Lamb, right? Okay. So, and Moses is sometimes a bit of a type of Christ. So that can work out. But for me, whenever I read the Song of Moses, I always took it back to Exodus 15.
Right.
Which is the actual Song of Moses when they cross the Red Sea, and then Moses sings that, Moses writes that song of deliverance, the God's deliverance of the children of Israel across the Red Sea. And for me, that fits perfectly here. Hmm. This is the song of deliverance of God's people. Right? The song of the Lamb. What's the song of the Lamb of Jesus going to be? It's the song of the deliverance of his people.
Yeah.
So for me, that works out really well. But for anybody that's trying to make this song, these actual words, be a song of these two, they completely fall apart because they can't do it.
Yeah.
Like most stuff here, if you try to look for any kind of direct relationship to anything, it kind of fizzles on you, right?
Yeah.
You feel like you can grasp Revelation. And then it just falls through your fingers.
Yeah. So, well, that's a very good image for it too, right? Because the harder people try to grasp onto these things, unless you can kind of add some symbolic meaning around it, it's really hard, isn't it?
And it's really tough because some people go so symbolic that they can't tie it to anything. and I don't go there either because, you know, in chapter 14, it was very symbolic language, but I saw a very real battle throughout Palestine.
Right.
There was a real battle and real bloodshed. Right. And actually that does fit in here. So if we go back to 2 here, he says, then I saw what looked like a sea of glass mixed with fire. And sometimes the sea, they're talking about the sea of humanity, of mankind. Hmm. Most people, when they see this sea, it's a little bit like the laver, like the big basin that's outside the temple where they, you know, where they do the washing. Hmm. Although this time it's full of fire. Hmm. Now some take us back to the image of the saint standing by the sea in heaven, and there's fire around there too. So some take it there and some take it to this labor. And then the fire in the labor, of course, is the fire of judgment.
I get you.
And so that's kind of, that works pretty well, doesn't it? Like if you do that labor thing, the big bowl outside the temple where they wash stuff.
Yeah.
And I saw those who had won the victory over the beast and his image. So now you go back to 13 and you have the image of the beast, right? And anybody who didn't have the mark of the beast, or anybody who didn't worship the image of the beast, would be killed. Remember, and this calls for patient endurance on the parts of the saints.
Right.
And then in 14, he talks about the saints, the victory of the saints, because they have the mark of God on them.
Yes.
Right. Yep. And then when he gets here, he talks about them winning over. They had victory over the mark of the beast. And those represented by the number of the beast, right, which represents the beast.
Right.
And we had said before that the beast, I think in literal terms, this beast was the Roman emperor, right? So there was a Roman emperor and the Roman religious system that the Christians were struggling with. Mm. And they were turning Christians over and killing them, right? This was the beginning of martyrdom for the Christians. Yep. So I really see that there. And then remember we pointed out, there's also symbolic possibilities all through history. And we did Napoleon. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Hitler. And we didn't talk about Saddam Hussein and all of these ones coming. Or if you're from the other part of the world looking toward the United States, is this.
Yeah.
But But Canada's always, we're always okay for some reason. Nobody thinks about us much.
Yeah.
But when people are talking about the image of the beast, they're seeing these kind of anti-godly things, you know, which oddly enough often carried a religious fervor with them. Like Hitler had his own kind of religious thing going. And I can't remember if Napoleon did. I just remember that the Orthodox priests, when they saw Napoleon, they thought of him as the Antichrist. And so there are these other possible fulfillments, right? But I took it to the first century that this is, that John's pointing to the Roman emperor, and these guys are really picking up on that imagery.
Yeah, yeah. Because that would mean something. Yeah, that would mean something to his audience, right? Obviously, rather than
totally mean something to his audience. So 13 is the beast and the nations following the beast. 14 are the people of God receiving God's mark on them, so that they're. That salvation is assured for them. But then the end of 14, he's talking about the destruction again, right? The destruction throughout Palestine. Yep. And now here, then he's talking about the victorious Christians again.
Yeah.
Which are, for me, are Christians. Remember, if you saw rapture anywhere in here, these are the tribulation saints.
Right.
But they are victorious over the beast. And they're standing by the sea of glass and they're holding their hearts. So where is the victory for these Christians? Heaven.
Yeah.
Right? Where are they? They're in God's presence.
Yeah.
And they're holding their harps. Never understood the harp thing.
No, that's okay. Okay. It must have meant something in the first century. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
You know, for me, it's got to be banjos. I've always loved that. Anyway, we won't go to dual standards.
No, let's not make heaven into hee-haw. Anyway.
but there's one of the guys did point out, he said the ones holding harps in this thing were the preachers at one point, the elders at one point.
Yeah.
Those standing around, the singers, held their harps at one point as well. Yeah. And now the tribulation saints, they get to hold their harps too.
Yeah.
Playing this song before God.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Actually, I read it in the Daily Bread just the other day, someone saying, talking about time spent in doing what you love and or being with someone you love and how fast time goes. And she talked about the chapter 4 with the preachers singing holy, holy, holy. For us, it seems like that seems interminable. But can you imagine doing something that you totally love, or being with someone that you completely love, and how fast time would go. And it was actually quite a beautiful little expression of these people being with God.
Yeah.
But the expression here again is the children of God are with him.
They're
and the song then. So now do we get to the song now? Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're singing the song. And look at this song. It's Lord God Almighty, how great and wonderful are all your deeds. King of the nations, how right and true are your ways. So again, he's completely extolling the power of God, right? And the justice and the righteousness of God. Who will not stand in awe of you? Who will refuse to declare your greatness? You are holy.
Yeah.
Right? All the nations will come and worship because your just actions are seen by all. And he says all of this, and then he shows a picture of heaven, and then he talks about this wrath being outpoured on the earth.
Yeah.
And again, it's somebody trying to explain how a good God and a wonderful God can allow such terrible things to happen. And he even goes one step further and said, these are happening by God's will.
Yeah.
So and he's done this several times in the book, right? If you're a Christian, you're going to die. If you're not a Christian, these horrible things are going to come upon you. You're going to wish you were dead. Yeah. And in all of that, thank you, God, you're just and holy.
Yeah. it's that tension that's always there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. How can God allow this to happen to me? He's just and holy.
Yeah, he's good with it. Yeah.
And this is going to be rough because next time I have a bad day, my wife's going to point at me saying this very thing. And she'll be right again.
Okay.
And it'll be hard to take again.
Yeah, that's, we're gonna hide this episode on her.
Yeah, we'll have to delete this one for sure.
Yeah. Yes. These are not the episodes you're looking for. Wow. Well, I was just reading that song, just making me think it's got a very, it's almost like a psalmic sort of language to it as well. That's one of the things I just noticed there, just looking at it. So.
Yeah, and actually, I forgot which psalm it is. One of the psalms is the Song of Moses as well, and it's very much that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let me pick it up at 5 now. All right, folks, so 15 verse 5, I'll pick it up at. After this I looked, and the sanctuary of the tent of witness in heaven was opened, and out of the sanctuary came the seven angels with the seven plagues, clothed in pure, bright linen, with golden sashes around their chests. And one of the four living creatures gave to the seven angels seven bowls full of the wrath of God who lives forever and ever. And the sanctuary was filled with the smoke from the glory of God and from his power. And no one could enter the sanctuary until the seven plagues of the seven angels were finished. This is not a good time about to happen.
No. Wow. No. And yeah. So now he sees the temple in heaven is open. Chapter 4, the temple is open. They've gone to heaven several times through this book.
Right.
And we've taken you there. They're there again. The tabernacle is there. So tabernacle is tent, right?
That's right. Tent. Right.
And the seven angels are there. And they're dressed in white linen. And the clean and shiny linen is righteousness.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be, but usually that's the idea behind wearing white clothes.
Yeah.
And then they have gold bands or a golden sash around their chest. So they're wearing gold around. And some seem to think that that's judgment. That's pointing toward judgment.
Okay.
So if it was brass or bronze, I would say judgment, but I don't see that with the gold.
Hmm.
You know? I just see this as part of their majesty. But if you want to make a judgment, it fits. I mean, you can make that work, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, one of the four living creatures gave them the bowls full of the anger of God, full of God's wrath, who lives forever and ever. And the temple was filled. So then they're given these seven bowls full of God's wrath. Now, do you remember? You remember in the trumpets, one of the angel actually gets a bowl filled, and he pours it out, right?
Right, right.
And that bowl was filled with the prayers of the saints, fire and incense, right? Yep. The prayers of the saints. Which takes us back to 6, which were the martyred saints saying, "Oh Lord, how long until you judge? Until you avenge us?
Just
a little while until your number is fulfilled." And then in 7, he pours out this bowl. And now again in 15, he's preparing, and in 16, they're going to pour out these bowls full of God's wrath.
Right.
And most of us tie it to the persecution of the saints.
Okay.
The persecution of God's children will be fulfilled in the wrath that he pours out against everybody. Mm. Mm. And is it tied to their prayers? I guess it could be. Yeah, this could be that.
Yeah.
Right? But it's definitely the dead saints, the martyred saints, martyred Christians. And this is the coming of God's wrath for his children being martyred.
Yeah.
And don't forget the martyred Christians. I mean, they're with God in heaven. I mean, it's all good for them now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is not a bad thing that they've been martyred.
No, no. Cause they've escaped this wrath, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And now they're with God, but he's still going to avenge them.
Yeah.
And he's going to pour this vengeance out upon the people of the world.
Right.
With the desire that they turn to him.
Yeah.
So it's corrective rather than punitive.
Right, right. And because I was about to make that allusion, you know, and I mean, I'm sorry, it's a weak one, but, you know, kind of that Lord of the Rings type thing, like this is the final blow, but it's not, is it? It's really, this is God still calling them. This isn't the very, very end of time. This is God still calling the people back to him, and they're still not going to listen.
Yeah, yeah, he's going to pour his wrath on the earth. They're still not going to pay any attention. There was just that one time that it seemed that the people turned back to him.
Yeah.
Earlier on, right?
Yeah.
With the book, and then they came back to him.
Yeah.
This time, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's at least not going to happen at this moment. And now the seven angels, And there's smoke in the temple. And yeah. The last time we had smoke was chapter 9, and that was smoke coming out of the earth, and we tied that right in with Satan.
Right.
And this time the smoke, this is God.
Yeah.
Other places where there's smoke is the smoke of their sacrifice goes up as a pleasing aroma to God.
Right, right,
so,
right.
So there are these different things with smoke, but this smoke is God's presence.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that shows you that images don't have to mean the same thing every time.
Right.
The last time smoke was Satan, this time it's God.
Well, and again, they would identify with that sort of picture, right? There'd be incense burning in the temple in Jerusalem, at least from their memory and things like that. They would have seen smoke in the temple. That wouldn't have surprised them.
Yeah, you're right. And then, of course, when God was up on the mountain, you know, there was smoke.
Yeah. Okay.
So it does work for them. Filled with smoke and the glory and the power of God, and no one could go into the temple until the seven plagues. So now we're kept out until this thing is done.
Yeah.
So God's presence is in the temple. We're not going in there until it's done.
Yeah.
I should have something a lot more profound to say about that, but I just don't.
You know, I think you've said this, and there's a fine theologian I work with, and she says all the time, you know, if the text doesn't say it, it probably isn't there. So I consider that wisdom. Well, all right, folks. Larry, anything else we should close up with this, or we're just waiting for 16? Because
no, we're just going to wait until he pours out his bowls of anger, and we're going to see this next thing upon the earth. Yeah. And remember, it could be linear; these things could be happening one after another, or he could just be looking at the same stuff from different angles.
Yeah,
and a lot of us think that these are parallel things: these bowls and trumpets and seals. Yeah.
Almost like he's in the middle, looking between, you know, all these different things that are simultaneously happening and going, oh, right, that's happening. And yet he's writing them linearly, but they're happening simultaneously.
Yeah. And we still think that his audience got this.
Yeah.
But there may be stuff here they didn't get. You know, it's like whenever we look at anything an author writes. And I remember someone saying about C.S. Lewis once, they said, I don't think he understood what he was saying there. And I thought, probably he did, you know.
Yeah.
He probably got his own stuff. but there's a lot going on, and again, this is God preparing for the next set, and them just saying, Christians are going to be okay.
Yeah.
You may not live, but you're going to be okay.
Yeah. You will be in the presence of the Lord.
Yeah. Which is really what it's all about.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to make it that simple, but it is that simple, for crying out loud.
It is that simple. Yeah. It's almost as simple. What did they say about Bart on his dying bed? They said, you know, what have you learned? And he said, Jesus loves me, this I know.
Yeah.
For the Bible tells me so. And I don't know if that was Bart, but that's what comes to mind, so that's what I'm going to say at this point.
That,
and I love the expression.
Yes, we've attributed it to him now. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, folks, Larry, thanks so much for that. Folks, thanks so much for joining us on this journey. As we've told you before, you can find us now. You'll see this video on YouTube. It's at our site, apocalary.ca. And you'll now see it on Apple iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Sorry, I got that wrong. Apple changed the name of it. On Apple Podcasts and on Google Play. So you can find it there. Or even in like apps like Stitcher or Overcast or any of those other ones. You can find us now. So take us where you go. Tell your friends and neighbors. Post it on telephone poles. Don't rent billboards. That's too expensive. But anyway, thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, I'm Steve. He's
Larry.
And we're out of here. Talk to you later, folks.